The story of Jacob and Esau is well known, but I'd like to highlight some very interesting aspects. We're going to discuss the meaning of their names and how that relates to their experiences. We will spend some time looking at Jacob's deception and ultimately the brothers' reconciliation. Join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. In the story of Jacob and Esau, we are first introduced to them when they were born. The Bible says, "And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb, and the first came out red all over like an hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them." An important biblical principle is that physical details matter. So many stories in the Old Testament don't include physical descriptions of the people involved. So when a person's appearance is mentioned, then it's relevant. Esau was described as ruddy or reddish. The Hebrew word is admoni, and that word is the basis for the name of Edom, a later kingdom associated with Esau. The name Esau means hairy. Now, the writer doesn't mention Esau's hairiness just to give us a good mental picture, but there's a reason. And this detail about his hairiness is an important part of the plot, which will become clearer later in the story. And the hairiness can also lend to a sense of Esau's wildness. He was reddish and rugged. There was kind of a wild strength about him. Jacob came out with his hand grasping the heel of Esau, which indicates his future attitude toward his brother. Jacob's name is derived from the Hebrew word for heel. Jacob in Hebrew is Yaakov, and the word for heel is Akev. The Hebrew word for Jacob, heel, and supplant are related to each other, so his name means one who takes by the heel or supplants. So Esau got his name from his physical appearance, meaning the hairy one, and Jacob got his name because of his action of grasping the heel. Both of these names are significant for the lives of these two men. The Bible tells us, "And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man, dwelling in tents." Let's look at the original Hebrew to gain some insight about these descriptions. The Bible calls Esau a cunning hunter. The Hebrew literally says, knowing hunting. He was also called a man of the field. Now, this doesn't mean that he engaged in farming. He was more a man of the open country. He liked to hunt. He liked the outdoors and the freedom to move and explore, which could imply that he was undisciplined and liked living even a little dangerously. In contrast, Jacob is described as a plain man. The Hebrew adjective translated as plain is Tom. And when it's used in other scriptures, it's usually translated as blameless or guiltless. So plain isn't really a good adjective. Jacob was basically being described as someone with integrity. Jacob was also described as dwelling in tents. And the point is not to tell us where he dwelled, but to communicate that Jacob was busy as a herdsman and a shepherd. He was a typical nomad. So we see this really strong contrast between these brothers, in which Esau was a rugged hunter wandering the outdoors, giving a perception of wildness, while Jacob fit the nomadic lifestyle of his family. And this is a key point. He filled the role that was prepared for him. The Bible tells us that Isaac loved Esau and Rebekah loved Jacob. Each parent was partial to one of the siblings. The reason Isaac loved Esau, the King James Version tells us, is because Isaac ate of Esau's venison. But the Hebrew literally says, because of the game in his mouth. Now, game meaning hunted food. So the hunted food pleased Isaac. And it could be that because Isaac was more of a passive character, at least what we know of him in the patriarchal narrative, that he liked Esau's bold and lively qualities, whereas Rebecca appreciated Jacob's more peaceful and dutiful nature. Now we come to one of the big conflicts between the brothers. Jacob was boiling some type of stew or pottage, and Esau returned from the field weary and faint. Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. Interestingly, the Hebrew literally says, "Feed me, please, with this red, ha'adom, ha'adom, for I am weary." Upon thus was his name, was Edom. Edom is a proper name, but it comes from the word Adam, which means to be red. So the man with the ruddy or reddish complexion was asking for reddish stew, and that's why his descendants are known as the Edomites, which refers to redness. So there is a strong play on words in this verse. Jacob was willing to give Esau some of the stew if Esau would sell his birthright. Now, the topic of the birthright is very important, but also one that deserves its own episode, so I can't cover it here. But it is basically the rights and privileges of the firstborn. We don't know exactly the parameters of the privileges of the firstborn at this stage of the patriarchal period, but by the time of the Mosaic period, the birthright entitled a person to a double portion of the father's inheritance and to a more honorable position within the family. And it was also a religious privilege. So Jacob could have been motivated by material things and prestige, but also spiritual things. It's very possible that Jacob was more spiritual-minded and sought after spiritual things. Some commentators view this scene as an example of Jacob's deceitful behavior, but the transaction was done in full awareness by both parties. There was nothing deceitful or deceptive about it. Jacob did take advantage of his brother's weakness, but it wasn't deceitful. It was really a shrewd move that showed his true desires. It showed that Jacob placed value on the birthright much more than Esau, since Esau was willing to sell it for one meal. Esau ate and left, and there's no indication that he even regretted his decision. In fact, the scene concludes with the biblical writer saying that Esau despised his birthright. It means that he held it in contempt or disdain. In reference to this story, the writer of Hebrews in chapter 12, verse 16, compares Esau to a profane person since he sold his birthright for one morsel of meat. A profane person is worldly and godless. It's someone who's unfit to approach God and access him. With this type of behavior and character on Esau's part, we can see why Esau was not chosen by God to carry on the line of the Messiah. Genesis chapter 26 deals with the famine in the land, Isaac's deception of Abimelech, and then Esau taking two wives from the Hittites, which caused Isaac and Rebekah grief. Chapter 27 covers the infamous story of Jacob's deception, in which Jacob pretended to be Esau in order to get the blessing that Isaac intended for Esau. When Isaac was advanced in age and his eyesight was poor, he wanted to pass on a blessing to his son Esau. Isaac asked him to hunt some wild game. Interestingly, both times that Esau lost something, he was returning from a hunt. It was after a hunt that he sold his birthright, and it was after a hunt that he realized that Jacob had secured his blessing through deceit. A key aspect of biblical stories is repetition. When someone's words are repeated, often there is significance to what is said or not said. And looking at a literal translation of the Hebrew, let's compare Isaac's instructions to Esau with Rachel's recitation of Isaac's words to Jacob. Isaac said, "Now please take your implements, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt provision," meaning meat, "for me, and make for me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me so I may eat in order that my soul may bless you before I die." When Rebekah retold Isaac's words to Jacob, this is what she said, "Bring to me game and make for me savory food that I may eat it and bless you before or in place of Yahweh, before or in the face of my death. Rebecca's retelling was pretty accurate, except that she added the words about being before the face or in the presence of God. Some scholars argue that Isaac may have said the words too, and the writer just didn't include them in Isaac's instructions. But that's unlikely. It's possible that Isaac knew that he was giving a special blessing to Esau that was in contradiction to the prophecy about Jacob, so Isaac didn't want to mention God in it. And it was Rebecca who mentioned God because she was thinking of the prophecy. So we don't really know, but there is a discrepancy, and God is mentioned in Rebecca's version of Jacob's instructions, which is very interesting, in Isaac's instructions, which is very interesting. In order to smell and feel like his brother, Jacob wore Esau's clothes and covered his exposed skin with goat skins. And it was probably a type of camel goat known in the East that had black silk-like hair. We normally think of this story with goats we're familiar with, and it's hard to understand how Isaac was duped. But the camel goats had silky hair. Even the Romans used it as a substitute for human hair. So it would have been still a little coarse, but it could work for the ruse. There is a sense that Jacob was operating undercover from literally head to toe, hoping nothing would be exposed, literally and figuratively. But the truth was eventually uncovered. Jacob went to his father and convinced him that he was Esau. And we need to think about the seriousness of this situation. Deception was bad enough, but deceiving one's own father was considered extremely egregious. And that's why Jacob worried that he would be cursed if the plan failed. It was also especially egregious that in his lying to his father, Jacob referred to having God's help in capturing the game so quickly, when it was actually his mother who had prepared the meal. So he wasn't just deceiving his father, but he spoke as if God had helped him. He used God's personal name, written as the Tetragrammaton, to his advantage in his deception. He said, "Yahweh, your God, brought it to me." And notice also that he said, "your God." He didn't call Yahweh his own God or Yahweh our God, but he told Isaac, "your God." Jacob said it to his father the way that we would expect Esau to say it, to be more authentic. After Jacob successfully deceived his father, Esau promptly returned. When Esau realized what had happened, he said, "Is not he rightly named Jacob? For he hath supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing." For a second time, there was a play on Jacob's name, but this time by Esau. Esau said that he was correctly called Jacob because twice now, Jacob supplanted him. However, Esau's complaint is not totally valid because he willingly sold his birthright to Jacob, so he can't play the victim in both accounts. Additionally, he may have known about God's blessing that was destined for Jacob, so he may have been complicit in his father's desire to work around God's prophetic decree. Now, there is a lot that can be said about Isaac's blessing of Jacob and Esau, but I want to point out one key thing in which the Hebrew gives us some insight. To Jacob, thinking it was Esau, Isaac said, "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which the Lord hath blessed. Therefore, God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee and nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee." Isaac's blessing given to Jacob consisted of material blessing, an abundance of food and drink, and political or relational blessing, in which people would serve him and bow down to him. Notice how Isaac said, "Therefore God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth." Now in Hebrew, the word translated "of" is the preposition "mean" and is often translated as "from." So it can be "from" or "of." And it's used actually twice in the sentence, even though the King James Version doesn't put it in the second time. It's implicit, so I put it in brackets. So it literally, it's from the dew of heaven and from the fatness of the earth. Now, when Esau pleaded for a blessing from his father, Isaac said, "Behold, thy dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live and shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass when thou shalt have the dominion that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck." Notice that the preposition mean, which means of or from, is again used in reference to the fatness of the earth and the dew of heaven. Well, how are both brothers going to have the same blessing? We know from the context that Jacob's blessing was superior and Isaac said he had little else with which to bless Esau. But the beginning of both blessings sound a lot alike. Well, this is where the Hebrew can be very helpful. The Hebrew preposition mean can refer to the source of something, but it also has a separative meaning and can be translated as away from. So it can be of or from something, meaning it's the source of something, but it can also mean away from. And modern scholars pretty much unanimously recognize that the preposition mean in Esau's blessing was separative. So both blessings had the same preposition, but the word was used differently for each blessing. For Jacob, it was a source. He would be sustained from the dew and from the fertile places. But for Esau, it was separative. He would dwell away from the fertile places and away from the dew. This interpretation aligns with the ultimate result in which Esau settled in the land that became known as Edom. Although there were some fertile areas, it was mostly rocky and barren. This interpretation also helps to explain Esau's hatred of Jacob. If Esau had believed that he'd received a substantial blessing, he would not have felt so much animosity and bitter enmity toward his brother. But he wanted to kill Jacob, so he obviously felt robbed by the blessing that he got, if you can even really call it a blessing. Jacob's conduct toward his brother by supplanting Esau as the heir to the birthright and then using deceit to secure the blessing laid the foundation for there to be ongoing enmity between the descendants of Jacob and Esau. Rebecca had schemed to get the blessing away from Esau, and now she had to think of a scheme to get Jacob away from Esau. Isaac agreed to have Jacob travel away, and he blessed Jacob again before he left, but this time in full awareness of what he was doing. I've often wondered what transpired between Jacob and his dad after Jacob's deceit. It's interesting that nowhere in the story do we hear about Isaac rebuking Jacob for his deceitful action. It's possible that Isaac didn't rebuke him because he himself was guilty of deception previously when he pretended to Abimelech that his wife Rebecca was his sister. Or it's possible that he did rebuke Jacob, but it's just not recorded in the book, in the text. In Genesis chapters 11 through 50, the writer's purpose was not to record every historical detail, but to show the lineage of a family beginning with Abraham onward that had been chosen by God to be the means by which all the nations of the earth would be blessed. So details relevant to that purpose are included, and other details sometimes are not. So when the text is silent, it doesn't mean that something didn't happen behind the scenes, or even that the action or event was acceptable. It may be that the writer did not feel that the detail was relevant for his purpose, even though, of course, sometimes we would like to have more information. So we're going to skip the section of Jacob's life in which he lived with Laban and built up his household, because I really want to focus on, or stay focused on, the relationship between the brothers. Years later, Jacob and Esau met again. Rebekah had planned to send for Jacob when Esau's wrath had subsided, but we never heard of any message. And there probably wasn't one sent, because at this point in the story, Jacob had no idea how Esau would treat him. First, Jacob sent messengers. He called himself "thy servant Jacob" and referred to Esau as "my master." He was obviously trying to conciliate Esau. But Esau sent no reply. Instead, he was coming personally to meet Jacob with 400 men. Jacob was obviously distressed. He divided the people and the livestock into two groups, hoping that at least one would survive if Esau attacked. Then he prayed. Then he thought of sending gifts of livestock to his brother in waves. He put gaps between the droves, and he told his servants to tell Esau that the livestock belongs to his servant Jacob, and they are a present to his lord Esau. He told them basically verbatim what to say, and he was willing to be humble and give Esau all of the honor in order to have peace. That night, Jacob had the supernatural wrestling match, but we're going to skip over that because that isn't the focus of our story here, and that could be another episode. I would assume that Jacob felt so much trepidation and probably fear as he awaited Esau's arrival. But Esau ran to meet him, embraced him, and kissed him, and they both wept. Then Esau asked about Jacob's family, and Jacob introduced them. Then Esau asked about all of the livestock that had been sent to him in droves. Jacob said that they were given to him to find favor in his sight. Now, many translations have Esau replying and saying, "I have enough." But actually, the Hebrew word refers to a great amount or an abundance. But Jacob continued to insist. Now, this is very interesting from a cultural perspective. Some commentators argue that the acceptance of the gifts would be evidence of a reconciliation between the brothers. And that would be the end of the transaction. But another interpretation involves the idea of honor and shame. Scholars disagree about the extent to which ancient Israel was an honor and shame culture, but pretty much every culture has some element of honor and shame in it. If we look at the meeting of Jacob and Esau through an honor and shame lens, then the giving of the gifts becomes a little more complicated. In an honor and shame society, when someone gave a gift, someone had to reciprocate with a comparable or greater gift in order to maintain one's honor. When Esau first questioned Jacob about the livestock, Jacob said it was to find favor in his eyes, and Esau responded by saying that he had much. So he refused the gift, and possibly he would have been obligated to reciprocate if he had accepted it as a gift. Then Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand." Notice again how Jacob called it a gift or a present. "For therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. Please take thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough." And he urged him, and he took it. Now notice that Jacob also said, "I have enough," and we're going to come back to that in a second. But notice that Jacob first called it a present, and then he called it a blessing. Had Esau accepted the livestock as a gift, he may have been beholden to his brother and may have been expected to reciprocate in some way, equal or more, to avoid shame. But when Jacob referred to it as a blessing, Esau then could view it as an allusion to the blessing that Jacob had deceptively taken. In that case, the gift was really a repayment, and Esau could accept it without being obligated to any type of further reciprocity. So it's very interesting to see it through this honor and shame lens, and possibly that affected Esau's acceptance of the gift, the livestock, that it wasn't until Jacob called it a blessing that Esau accepted it. I think it's also interesting to compare how each brother described their wealth. Now, in the King James Version, the words of both men are translated that they have enough. And it's difficult with translating. The translators are trying to take the original language, and sometimes they'll do a word-for-word correlation based on the range of meaning of the words. But sometimes they're also trying to convey an equivalent meaning, meaning that the context of what they think is trying to be said, even if it's not a word-for-word correlation. So in this case, both brothers say that they have enough, but actually the original Hebrew is different. And I think that the English in this case kind of masks a little bit that there is an important nuance that we can see in the Hebrew that is relevant. So Esau actually said, "I have rav," and that Hebrew word means much, many, a multitude, or an abundance. And it's a different word than Jacob uses. Jacob said, "I have kol," and that Hebrew word means all or everything. So Esau was prosperous, but Jacob said because God had dealt graciously with him, he had everything. And I think that's a very meaningful difference. The fact that Rebekah was given a prophecy while she was pregnant that the older child would serve the younger child, which was contrary to the normal procedure in which priority was given to the firstborn, it emphasizes that Jacob's elevation was part of God's plan all along. God had chosen Jacob to continue the patriarchal line, not based on any merit or anything Jacob did to earn it or anything he did to secure it, but because of God's grace and God's favor. And I think in the end, Jacob recognized that.